Yo, Adrian! I did it!
Are you ready? You are about to enter the Power On Boost podcast, where we facilitate the awakening of your personal power by providing powerful content that'll inspire you, motivate you, and help you realize you are enough. Come join your host, Adrian Wesley, and let him show you how you can turn your power on to be alive to thrive.
Power On Boost, raising vibrations and awakening personal and entrepreneurial power worldwide. I'm super excited to share this episode with you. This episode was recorded and shared with the Power On Audio Club. Power On Audio Club is the ultimate entrepreneur mentorship program. I'm a co-founder. It's my main business. This episode was recorded a few months ago when we were under lockdown in the middle of the COVID pandemic. Dr. Nick Jensen is a naturopathic doctor out of Vancouver, Canada. If you need a naturopath, he does online sessions, so check him out. This episode is about intermittent fasting. I'm very, very passionate about this subject. Intermittent fasting has had a drastic positive effect on my life. I'm excited to share this with you. If you want to check out more about Power On Audio Club, check out www.poweronaudioclub.net. And remember, make today the best day of your life. Remember that you have everything you need inside of you to manifest your dreams. You're super powerful. You're super unique. You're super awesome. And the only person standing in your way is you. I love you a lot. Enjoy the episode, and I'll speak with you next week, my friend. How you doing, Power On Audio Club? I'm super excited to be here with Dr. Nick Jensen. It's great to have you back, brother.
It's always good to be here, buddy. I mean, we just got on a little conversation beforehand just to lift each other up. And it's, you know, it's always a pleasure to tune in with you and see your face and see the beard and the muscles and the all that's you and how great I am too.
Yeah, brother, you are awesome. Turning Power On with Dr. Nick Jensen and Adrian Z. Wesley. This episode's about intermittent fasting. But what Nick was talking about at the beginning was him and I were just talking about how we both feel a bit off and we're not sure if it's energetics around the world. But Nick, maybe before we get started, do you want to share a little bit about what you've been feeling if you're interested?
Sure, let's do it. I mean, I think it's just a fascinating time. We live in unprecedented times at this, you know, the juncture in 2020 or 2020, I should say. And, you know, we're faced with dilemma and trauma and, you know, ups and downs in emotion and information. And depending on where you're looking, it's a total jigsaw puzzle of how things are going to play out. And, you know, sometimes that emotional unknowing or the uncertainty of it all starts to weigh down and you don't realize how it's impacting you. And, you know, we went over a bunch of different scenarios of situations that are fantastic in our lives and wonderful and so many things to be grateful for. And yet, you know, despite those things, it's easy to also just dip into a little bit of anxiousness and depression and just low mood and it can consume you sometimes. And so finding that thing that lights you up, you know, having a great conversation with someone you love, you know, how can you optimize a situation or find the healing in it, right? And find the lesson in it. So
super powerful. And yeah, what I was explaining, well, Nick came on and said that, you know, his business is going great. He's got a great house, great family, but he's been feeling kind of off the last few days. And I said, yeah, I've been waking up with anxiety in the mornings, a little light anxiety. It's gotten better, but it was pretty bad when COVID hit. And what we talked about is that nothing is ever, we can't ever control what's coming. And that I believe that all of us are picking up on this energetic global uncertainty right now. So I wanted to start off this episode of turning your power on by letting you know that if you're feeling off or funky right now, I think it's pretty normal. And it's like Nick said, it's Nick and I both said, well, the great thing that comes out of how we're feeling right now is it allows us to spend more time detaching and learning to be okay with ourselves inside and not waiting for our external world to make us happy, because both of us have great things going on in our external world, and there's still some unsettledness going on inside. But as we also discussed, it's fucking frustrating.
Yeah, it is what it is, right? I mean, it's not all roses and rainbows, you know, and there's not always going to be sunny days, but I think that's part of the contrast of life. It's like, how do you really appreciate the blessings? Sometimes when things seem a little dark and you do have to spend a little more energy searching for them. You know, we say this, I mean, it's part of the topic today too, but health doesn't happen to you. Energy doesn't happen to you. Happiness doesn't happen to you. It's something you cultivate. It's something you grow and you fertilize and you water and you respect it like anything else in life. And you know, if we hang our hats on depression and make that who we are, or even an expectation of bliss every single day, I mean, if we hang our hats on that, we're set up for disaster. So, you know, I think we, you know, as you teach all the time, it's like, how do you uncover the adaptability within, and you know, and that's all of our paths to freedom, I think.
100%, brother. And my message to anybody listening is that this is a huge opportunity to start going within and start connecting with things that are inside of you and connecting to source energy. And it's an interesting time though, brother, but I feel better just talking to you. So that's another example that, you know, if you're not feeling good right now, go connect with a friend that makes you feel good, or go do something you do. The bottom line is you got to get out of bed in the morning and start putting one foot in front of the other, and you'll start to feel better. That's what I've discovered. But weird time on planet Earth. But I'm excited to be alive, and I'm excited to be sharing content with everybody on the Power On Audio Club. We're going to talk about intermittent fasting today. So, Nick, what's your background with intermittent fasting, brother?
Mm-hmm. Well, it to be honest, it took a patient to come in and let me know what they were doing. It must have been 9, 10 years ago, at least 9 years ago. And they told me, as I asked most patients, what do you eat during the day? Tell me about your nutrition plan. I just eat a big steak at nighttime. And I kind of caught me off guard at the time. I didn't know anything about intermittent fasting at that point in time. And I was thinking in my head, this guy is nuts. What's he doing? Like, why is he just eating a steak at night? You know, and I was definitely much more deep into a vegetarian dogma, anti-inflammatory diet. Everyone should be following some version of that. And so I just said, you know what, why don't you throw some greens powder or throw a salad in there at least some other point in the day. And then that was kind of the end of the discussion. I could see the disappointment on his face, just, you know, looking at me like, you know, you're a naturopathic doctor. How do you not know about all the different diets that are out there? And I kind of took it on as a responsibility to investigate this further. And so that, and then my own personal experimentation, probably going about 7 or 8 years ago now, when our first son was born, I started to play with it, because I was getting tired all the time. My kid was waking up in the middle of the night. I was supposed to go to work, and I'd get sick, and my cold would last like 2 to 3 weeks. I wasn't used to this lack of sleep, having a newborn baby in the home. And I realized I had to do something different than what I was doing, despite all the, you know, knowledge in nutrition and exercise, whatever I was able to do at the time. And so it forced me to move into an experiment. And that experiment, you know, 8 years later, has been full of amazing realizations about my own health, but then also in how we teach it to our patients.
Awesome. Awesome. And my experience is, I've been doing it for, I think, five years now. It's had a massive change on my life. So many benefits to intermittent fasting, and we're excited to dig into them. So Nick, what can you go over the top benefits of intermittent fasting for everybody, please?
Yeah. So one little caveat I'd say around fasting is that intermittent fasting, in my mind, is just how we're designed to be eating. And so I like to say, you know, some people call it time-restricted eating, or just eating according to feeling a true level of hunger. If we were to break down the power of fasting, all the things that it does, I mean, it decreases inflammation, optimizes your growth hormone and testosterone. It helps to reset your bad DNA. So when illness hits, it's turning on genes for illness, and these are called epigenetic pathways. So it resets your DNA expression. It turns on your ability to regrow or produce stem cells. Upregulates a healthier microbiome. which is part of all healing and all health expression. It causes something called energy diversion. So when your body is so busy breaking, digesting food, obviously all your blood supply and energy requirements are much higher when you're constantly eating. So when you are able to avoid or compress your eating window, you can divert that energy fuel to the brain, to old injuries, or, you know, other aspects of the system. Obviously improves cognitive efficiency, improves brain function, turns on your ability to produce ketones, which are a more efficient fuel, especially for the brain. I mean, I feel like there's so many. Those are the big ones that we usually speak to, but and I mean, that's that we could go off on a tangent any one of those, but there are many, many benefits.
Well, and some of the ones, those are obviously massive, and some other ones that I wanted to add in there is someone that suffered from depression before in my life and anxiety. I've noticed a massive difference when I intermittent fast or time restricted eating, and I give my body the chance to use all of that extra energy to do what it needs to do to make my brain work properly. So if you have bad mood, if you have depression, it's something I highly recommend experimenting with, because a lot of times people are eating too much and overextending their digestive system, and that robs the body of the energy that it needs to produce the feel-good neurotransmitters and hormones and all of that stuff. One other one on the list too that is really good for any women listening right now is skin regeneration. I notice when I do days of no eating and fasting, my wrinkles, I don't have many, but the skin gets even smoother. It's super, super amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we can't forget just metabolic effect, right? Body composition. I mean, you're teaching your body how to become a more efficient fat burner. So you're going to lean out more and shred more. And, you know, and on the flip side, there's often a worry, you know, just, you know, people who have an amazing build, you know, they're concerned about wasting muscle, and that's exactly the opposite of what it's doing. It's actually diverting the breakdown of muscle and into fat burning. So the list goes on for sure.
Well, that's been something I was fascinated with, and we talked about this on the other episode we did on this series about eating food, and we talked a bit about intermittent fasting. But, you know, I'm 210 pounds now, and I've stayed at that weight, and I eat 1 to 2 meals a day. So it's amazing. Something else that I think people need to understand that I'll let you touch on is something you said at the beginning, is like, this is not a diet. This is not a fad. And I personally believe that our ancestors did not eat at fucking 7 o'clock at night and have a big meal with the family, personally, and I don't believe that they ate 3 meals a day or 8 every day. So what's your experience with that, brother, in terms of, you know, maybe what our bodies are designed to do is not what we're being taught in the developed world?
Yeah, I mean, all we have to do is look back and see how have we been doing over the last 30-40 years, right? You know, when we've implemented the seafood diet, which is, you know, we're hungry or we see food, we eat it. We realize that the obesity rates over the last 20 to 30 years have just, you know, I mean, they've gone through the roof. Cancer, cardiovascular disease, autoimmune, insulin resistance, diabetes, you know, they're all going up. And you can see a common theme with a lot of these things, and that's high insulin. Well, we can only develop increased insulin when we eat, essentially. And any protein or carbohydrate, healthy or not, that's going to drive up insulin. So it's the hibernation hormone. It's the hormone of fat storage. It's the hormone of inflammation. So clearly what we've been doing is not working. But all we have to go, you know, just go back, you know, pre-refrigeration and pre-modern food industry with fast food and food availability, you know, 24/7. You know, before that situation, we were always in a feast famine phenomenon, right? And again, indigenous cultures all over the globe, they have, you know, a time in the year when their crops are, you know, you can harvest the crops, and there's time in year where they're planting and things haven't grown yet, and they've had to find different ways to store food, or they migrate to different parts of, you know, their ecosystem that allows for, you know, more food abundance. And so we would have had to move through periods where food was less available, and then periods of time where there's feasting. So that's built into our very genetics, you know, we're, and like I said, with the modern rates of illness and how they're skyrocketing, this clearly we're doing something wrong globally.
100%, 100%. We're doing something wrong. And it's kind of back to that, that old analogy sorry, it froze up there for a second. I'm losing my mind here with technology, but we're back on track and everything's going to be okay. You were frozen there for a bit. So I was just looking at this frozen face going, what the fuck? And maybe it's because Nick and I were a little bit off today that our technology's off. Yeah, it's really interesting, brother. And I think a lot of what we've been taught, we have to unlearn and relearn. And eating is one of those. Now, when it comes to who should not be doing intermittent fasting?
Well, there's no data on this as far as I've seen. I've seen some studies to sort of negate this, but if you have an eating disorder in general, I don't think it's a good idea. You know, despite there may be some benefit for people, but you know, bulimia, anorexia, obviously that's these are serious mental, emotional, physiological disorders that need to be addressed, you know, at the root of the trauma that allowed for these behaviors to arise. So any eating disorder is probably best to avoid. Pregnancy, you know, what we usually say with pregnancy in general is that, you know, what you were doing going in, just kind of continue. You know, you don't want to get into food restriction when you're trying to build a baby. There's lots of time to implement this behavior after you're done nursing, for example. I mean, those are the big ones. There's some people that don't do well that have gallbladder issues or gallbladder or gallstones and potentially some people with more serious liver pathology. There's a rare illness called Gilbert's disease, which when people avoid food for periods of time, they jaundice and they get yellowy skin. It's just a byproduct of bilirubin building up in the body. So again, these are more genetic characteristics. All it would take would be a little bit of fasting to find out if that was there. And again, it's pretty rare. Outside of that, though, I mean, like I said, this is kind of just you're moving back into a diet that served your ancestors for, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of years. So, you know, how could we have sped up our genetic expression so quickly over 20 or 30 years that this is now bad? So the reality is it's been a part of us. It always has been. And, you know, going back to the disease rates, you know, 50 to 60% of the population are insulin resistant or obese, you know, so there's, and that's a direct result of high insulin. I guess lastly, I'd say just, you know, women with their monthly cycle there, I think you can be a little bit more strategic with how you implement fasting into your monthly rhythms, because the last thing on that, I guess, list would be women doing too much fasting leading to anorexia, just because you're getting nutrient depleted in multiple different areas. So there's a good amount that would be unique for you as an individual that you'd have to experiment with and or test your hormones. And then there's too much. And that would probably encroach on a bit of orthorexia, which would be, you know, body dysmorphia, like concern too much about how you look, and there'd be some unfavorable emotional attachment to that, I'm sure.
Awesome. And, you know, one thing I always hear from people is, oh, well, I'll starve, or what am I going to do? And the reality is you won't starve. Most people have a lot of fat on their body that can still be burnt off. What is your ideal way for someone to start playing around with intermittent fasting? What would you suggest? That how would they start?
Yeah, I mean, what you just said was so important. You know, depending on our muscle mass, our body composition, we may have 2,000, 2,200, 2,500 calories of sugar or glycogen to burn. And then we've got, like, you know, depending on the size of our body, maybe 80,000 calories of stored fat. And that can be, you know, a 150-pound person, 160-pound person. So we've got a near endless supply of energy to use. And I always remind people of the longest recorded fast was 385 days or something like this. It was a Scottish guy who did this study where he was part of a study where they tracked him for, you know, over a year without any food. And so I say that just because our bodies are capable of amazing things, things that, you know, are far, you know, exceed what we would typically expect. So enter intermittent fasting, obviously a much easier way to do that. Essentially, step one, you get all your meals within a 12-hour window and you get rid of snacks, 3 meals a day. You eat so you satiate yourself. And that's step one. And then step two could be, you know, taking that 12-hour window, shrinking it down to 10, maybe 8 hours, you know, your 3 meals in that 10 to 8 hour window. Step two. Step three, you get rid of your first meal. And then you sandwich your two last meals together. And that window you can play with, right? I mean, you teach this all the time. You don't want to be eating right before bed. So you definitely want to you're in the late afternoon to evening or early evening for your last meal. But ideally we get down to 2 meals a week, or sorry, 2 meals a day. And then maybe once a week you do, you know, 1 meal a day. And you can, we call this diet variation. You experiment with, you know, something that works for you.
Yeah. And my take on that too, is that I would experiment with it. But if you're starting out, start eating within a 12-hour window. But traditional IF is 8-hour eating window, 16-hour fast, whatever traditional is, but that's sort of the norm. But I've got it down now to eating 2 meals a day within about a 6-hour eating window. I do my best not to ever eat after 6 PM, because of the connection between, insulin when you eat food, it raises your insulin, lowers your melatonin. So can you speak to a little bit why it's so important not to eat late in the evening?
Yeah. I mean, you said it right there. Our body's preparing for sleep. And so we're totally tied to the rhythms of the sun and the moon. And, you know, obviously we're surrounded by artificial light these days. So our hormones are getting really confused with what's going on. I know you do a great job, you know, living in Thailand, you've got the moonlight, you've got candles, you've got other ways to, you know, illuminate your surroundings at that time of day. And that's where dimmer switches and other things are great to implement, or turning off screens early enough in the evening so that you're not getting this stimulus. Like, people don't realize how stimulated you are with that blue light, which is another suppressant for melatonin. So yeah. Your body's trying to put you to sleep and prepare for recovery, which comes at nighttime. So as that melatonin rises, actually melatonin actually increases in the pancreas, which is where insulin's secreted, and so it wants to slow down our body's ability to digest and break down food. And so our bodies basically just don't perform as well digestively, hormonally, when we're confusing this system that's trying to sleep. You know, cutting off that nighttime meal as early as you can is always a great idea.
So if we wanted to give people listening an ideal eating window, for us anyway, mine is probably 10. If you were looking at an 8-hour eating window, going to bed at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. Yeah, I mean, 8 hours, 10 to 5. You like to eat a little later in the morning, correct? What's your ideal? I mean, I would say my ideal eating window is shorter than the normal person starting, because sometimes I don't eat until 3 o'clock and that's the only meal I had. But if you're starting out, I would recommend starting and trying getting it to an 8-hour eating window. What's your ideal eating window, brother?
Yeah, it depends. When I'm at work, I just eat that one meal when I get home at night. And I see patients throughout the day, so I don't take any time out to eat, and, you know, I'll drink my water and have tea or whatever I want during that time. So when I'm at work, it's one meal a day I eat when I get home. And I may get home anywhere between 6:30 and 7:30. And so sometimes, depending on the day that I'm working late, it'll be a later meal. I don't love that idea, but I haven't eaten at all. So I have a bit of a feast, I guess you could say. It's always a smaller meal though, just because, you know, you fill up faster when you've only had that one meal. But in general, I guess, you know, when I'm at home with my boys, I'll probably eat somewhere between 12 and 3 in the afternoon. And then I'll eat my dinner between 5 and 7. And so I'm usually done putting food in my body by 7:30 at the latest.
And what time are you going to bed if you're doing that?
Usually around 10:30. Yeah, 10:30. I mean, during this, you know, world-changing experience that we're in, I've definitely been going to bed a little bit later, like more like 11. Generally 10:30.
So Nick's meeting that requirement that I preach to people is don't eat 3 to 4 hours before bed. So we're not saying you can't eat a dinner, but the key thing is to eat a dinner that's not a massive heavy meal, and to eat it before 7 o'clock ideally. And if you really want to feel the benefits, stop eating by 5 or 4. I know that I feel like a different person when I don't eat 4 or 5 hours before bed. When I go to bed on a fasted stomach, I wake up because I've had mental stuff, you know, like I said, depression and anxiety. I wake up feeling like a totally different person when my body and my brain has all of that extra energy to reboot itself. Now, when we talk about meals per day, brother, I think the key thing that we want to express to everybody is not to stuff yourself. What happens when, I know the stomach is about the size of a fist. What happens to the stomach if you fill it with a pizza? What goes on then? I mean, it's one thing I can tell you, I can't see it happening, but I would imagine it's like stretching your skin. You're stressing that organ out. What happens when you do that to your stomach?
Yeah, I mean, especially if it's your first meal of the day and or maybe your only meal of the day. You know, if you've gone 16, 18, 20 hours, your stomach has shrunk even more, right? And so those stretch receptors, especially depending on how fast, I mean, part of this is how fast you eat. Because if you eat nice and slowly, your body can acclimatize pretty well. Like it can adjust as it goes. I mean, it's a very flexible organ, of course. But the problem is often when people are hungry or they're eating unconsciously, they're just shoveling food down their stomach. And so, yeah, you're not breaking down that food properly. I mean, there's a whole digestive communication that happens just by chewing food and that sends information down to your pancreas and your liver to secrete certain enzymes that eventually meet in the small intestine where your stomach is emptying into the small intestine. And so there's this whole communication system that needs to happen in an efficient way. So when you're eating like that, you're less likely to stuff yourself, with the pizza or whatever it may be. But I mean, this is also a conversation on quality of food. If you're say gluten intolerant, gluten sensitive, or just eat a crap load of it, I mean, you're going to get a lot of extra inflammation just from the types of grains that you're using. And that in itself is like that'll put you into a coma. And be disruptive to the microbiome in the gut and how you're breaking that food down. So I think it's a multi, pronged discussion or approach to how to optimize that situation.
And what about can you speak to what I want to get people excited about is I don't think people understand that when you go to bed on a fasted stomach, you burn fat through fat oxidization. So can you explain that a bit? Because I have been able to maintain a very shredded physique, partly just from not eating before bed. So there's a lot of people that are carrying around a lot of extra fat right now. And I want you to get excited that it doesn't necessarily have to be 10 hours on a treadmill to burn that off. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. I mean, I like to break it down simply for people that, if you want to put on muscle, you exercise, you lift weights, you lift heavy things, you spend time, pushing those muscles. If you want to burn fat, you got to avoid food. It's kind of that simple. It's like, that's the only way to properly burn through food in an efficient way. And now you can use your lean muscle mass as an increasing combustion tool and to be a more efficient store of glucose and glycogen. And it can also help to clean out some of the liver because that's essentially when we've got central obesity, extra weight around the gut or the midline or chest, we're storing fat into different tissues of the body that don't need that fat. And when we bypass this mechanism of basically our liver taking that energy and then, shuttling it out of the system, we start to build up our triglycerides or other forms of cholesterol. We start to build up these fatty deposits in, the different areas of our body. And then those areas become endocrine-like glands. They start pumping out cortisol and estrogen and all sorts of garbage. So it's like it becomes like a self-revolving fat producing machine when we keep carrying that extra fat around our body. And so, our body needs to go into hibernation. We need to be able to utilize those fat stores. And so time away from food is the only way to properly change how the mitochondria burn energy. So the mitochondria, just a little refresher for those that may not know, it's the molecule or the organelle inside every single cell of your body that takes fat or sugar together with oxygen and makes energy. But if you're constantly fueling your system, you know, it's like constantly throwing a log on your fire. It's like you need that energy, and those mitochondria are the way that they're utilizing themselves is they're only programmed to use sugar. They're not programmed to use fat. And so you need to retrain your body how to do that. And that happens at the level of the mitochondria. So time away from food is forcing what we call forcing adaptation. It's forcing a genetic switch in your mitochondria to now be able to burn fat as a fuel. And at the end of the day, like a cell that's so deprogrammed that can no longer use fat as a fuel is literally a cancerous cell. It's a cell that has isolated itself from its environment, and now it's just a sugar manufacturing machine. And it, you know, obviously creates a lot of inflammation and everything else. So it's not just that this is so beneficial to burn the extra fat. It's vital to life. It's vital to not even just survival, but thriving. You need to be able to teach your body how to do this, because your very health, energy, hormones, brain function, skin, everything we spoke to depends on it. Our body needs to be a hybrid engine, and it's not this, you know, one-dimensional combustion engine, as in like a gasoline or glucose burning engine.
Powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. The last thing I want to talk about is the fact that I know we've talked about this, but we are the only species on this planet that eats when we're sick. Is that correct?
It seems to be the case. There's a lot of sickness going on right now, and we're all stuffing our faces. Yeah. Well, not all of us, right?
But animals in nature don't eat when they're sick. Is that correct?
I mean, that's absolutely it. I mean, they know when, just like kids, they typically, you know, as a parent, you think, oh, shoot, my kid's not eating. You know, there's something wrong with them. Well, maybe they're just listening to their body. And yeah, so animals know how to do that. We don't. We medicate, you know, we medicate with our food. We medicate with our television. We medicate with our codependency in a relationship. We medicate with technology. You know, we're constantly doing that. We're constantly trying to do something to correct the situation that we're in. And so, we feed ourselves when we're sick. It's craziness.
Yeah, because you got to give your body the time to heal itself and use all that extra energy. Super awesome. I love having you on this show. Everybody in the Power On Audio Club, super fortunate to have your expertise. Anything you want to say about intermittent fasting to finish off, brother?
Yeah, take your time. You know, you highlighted this again, is that this is a lifestyle change. You know, everything that you teach too, Adrian, it's not like you should try meditation once. You should try going to the gym once, see how that goes. Like, this has to be a lifestyle change. You have to be willing to be a scientist and experiment on your body. You know, be willing to do the breath work, be willing to do the cold showers, to be willing to do those extra push-ups, be willing to get into a mindset of resilience and see what it's like to go a little bit longer without food. Because when your hormones actually activate in your favor, you're going to know what real hunger feels like. And it's completely different than emotional eating. It's completely different than, you know, pacifying that stress that you're under. And I got to say, man, like, I mean, same for you. In this situation, despite the chaos, many people have been putting on a crap load of weight because they have been pacifying their emotions. This is a lifestyle change. So in my mental programming, the kitchen's open or the kitchen's closed. I know that I only eat 1 to 2 times a day. I'm going to make the most of it. And so what I put in my body is going to be really amazing food. I'm not going to, you know, grab a Big Mac and shove that down my throat and think that, you know, I'm intermittent fasting. I can do whatever I want. I want to really fuel my body. And so, you know, when you do adapt to a lifestyle change like this, you gain so much power and control over your body that you know, despite craziness, you can still honor your system. And so that's the lifestyle change.
Awesome. Awesome. So it's super powerful. Intermittent fasting has changed my life. I know it's had a massive impact on Dr. Nick Jensen's. I'm choosing that you guys will look into this and play around with this. I promise you there's so many amazing benefits. Remember that you're super powerful. Remember that you are the creator of your reality by the choices you make every day. And some of the biggest choices you make are with your food. Don't ever forget, you're super amazing. Make today the best day of your life. I love you lots, and we'll chat with you soon.
You just finished another episode of the Power On Boost podcast with your host, Adrian Wesley. Make sure to hit that subscribe button and tune in next time. Power on!